Hey, this is Jack Black, and you're listening to Post Rock Paper Scissors.
Thank you.
Alright, welcome to Post-Rock, Paper, Scissors. This is Armand here. Today is episode 134. On the episode today, we've got Paul Goff of Pimmin. How's it going, Paul?
Oh, very well. Thanks for having me on.
Paul curated the playlist today. He came up with the tracks that we're going to play. Before we dive into that, what's going on, Paul? What's new in the life of Paul Goff?
Well, I guess an exciting year has ended and an even more exciting one's just commenced. Probably the last couple of years have been, as much as I've had a voracious appetite in consuming music, I've had a similar appetite for creating music as well, and Pimmin has sort of kicked on into overdrive in the last couple of years. So I've got some, you know, exciting new releases that'll come out this year, as well as the first tour throughout Europe for a very long time. So I guess from that aspect, it's looking to be a good 2012.
All right. So for those who might not be familiar with your music or what you do, tell us a little bit about it.
I find it a hard question to answer myself. Basically, my music, I'm a bit of a bowerbird. I collect small fragments of sounds that I both create myself and that I plunder. But anything that is plundered is rendered through the forging fires of my laptop. And I like to kind of create what I call Cat in the Hat music. If you watch or read the book Cat in the Hat, where he juggles a whole bunch of seemingly disconnected objects, he manages to sort of weave them into this tapestry until they all fall down. Well, I try not to let things fall down, but I like to weave sounds together to create these unusual listening experiences. So sometimes it's a bit jarring, sometimes it's quite beautiful. And my instrument of choice is a laptop.
Sure. So how did you get started in this type of music?
Well, I actually started doing this kind of music using tape loops, and I was inspired in the early 80s by listening to, in Australia, there was a band called Severed Heads. And in that very early incarnation, this is prior to them going more dance, electronic, they made a lot of music just using, you know, using physical tape loops, and for me that was one of the real opening of my brain into this whole other realm of what I understood to be music. And I really wanted to, because I really loved it, I really wanted to do that myself. So I didn't actually cut up the tapes, but I used to buy really old answering machine tapes and maybe shorten them slightly, and then I just used a multi-track cassette recorder, and I made all these kind of loops of sounds, and realized that the wackier the passage you had, your brain looks for the pattern, and so you, even if there was a really bad edit, you'd hear this clunk and it would become a part of the rhythm that would create the loop. So I've been doing that for a very long time, but you know, it took me a long time to actually release anything, and it was probably, you know, I've always had this kind of stop-start mentality or love-hate relationship with making the music, in a sense, which sounds weird maybe, but so I go through these periods where I just kind of become very self-deprecating and give up on it, and then there are times when I get excited again. So I guess when Pimmin was born, in reality, it was because I suddenly was excited again, and maybe using a laptop, which, you know, made portability of doing things a little easier. So yeah, that's how I kind of got into it. But I think the loop was always in me.
All right. So what were you doing before Pimmin, or maybe even before that? What were you listening to before you got into this style of music?
Well, I guess I'd always had a curious ear. When I was about 6 or 7, my parents had an old reel-to-reel machine, and I kind of, that became my toy when I discovered it, and I used to sit and just record hours and hours off the television or, you know, realised that I could interact. I could actually talk over the top and make my own comments, which was obviously quite amusing when you were young. And then I learned how to sort of, while you were recording, if you turn the microphone on and off, it actually made the motor stop. So you could create really wacky sounds. So I'd started even at that early age of making my own sounds, I guess also listening to shortwave radio, hearing, you know, a lot of those in-between station points that just have, you know, kind of generally weird kind of sounds, and hearing those. So So perhaps it wasn't too far of a stretch of the imagination when I first started listening to things like Nurse with Wound, because I'd already sort of kind of heard things that were unusual through even just listening to detuned radios, you know. And I guess once I started listening to a lot of those things, nobody I knew could understand why I did or why I liked it, or, you know, I think they thought I was a bit odd. So I just ended up keeping it to myself, the things that I listened to. And then I guess when I was in my late teens, I started listening to a lot of late-night radio that would play things that were a lot, you know, outside the realms of commercial music. And that's when I really, you know, sort of felt my calling, as it were. I realised that here was something I really was excited about, that I felt a bit annoyed that it had been denied for a while for me to hear this music, because I'd only ever really listened to, I guess, commercial radio. And so through that, I decided to embark on a career working in radio. And so I've done that basically since I left school. And, you know, I met up with some people recently that sort of said, you know, you were just really lucky. It was like a perfect fit. The thing that you really enjoyed and loved and played with in life has become your career, which is, you know, pretty exciting. I consider myself very lucky to be in the position I'm in, you know.
All right. So say you're on a bus or something and you have your headphones on and you're listening to music, and the person next to you starts up a conversation about what you're listening to, and it comes up that you make music yourself. What do you say to that average person about your music? Like, how do you describe it to them?
In all honesty, I probably wouldn't bring up that I made music. I honestly, I mean, there were people here in my workplace that didn't know for about 6 years until finally someone found out. I'm not really that kind of person to go around sort of talking about it. If it did happen for some reason, let's say they said they made music or something along those lines, and then they said, well, what do you do? It's more often, to be honest, that scenario might happen where I'll meet somebody who's been told that I do this, and I'll say, so, Paul, tell me about your music. And I guess without trying to be a musical snob, you try to gauge what their listening experience is. If you know that their point of reference is Elton John, how the hell am I going to even explain what I do? You know, you try and just say, well, you know, you would talk about some kind of movie soundtrack or something, you know, abstract like that, and that it's best listened to in an art gallery. But even so, that doesn't prepare people. I mean, the first time I ever played it to my mother, she just sort of sat back and looked at me and said, oh, Paul, that's awful. So, you know, you kind of have to know where you're going to win your battles. And if at the same time, though, you can't limit people either, because you will find that sometimes you make assumptions that because a person has never heard something like this, they're just going to think it's crap or not music. And then you can get a big surprise. You know, I've had one of the last concerts I played in Melbourne, I told a really old school friend who I hadn't seen in like hundreds of years, and he and his wife just showed up, and all I did for the first hour was apologize to them. I said, I'm really sorry. And they ended up loving it. And I actually believed them, because that's the other hard thing, believing people when they say they really like what you do. But I could tell they were quite genuine, and they found it quite intriguing, I think is the word. So, you know, it's hard, because it, you know, the majority of people don't think are very patient listening to music or new experiences with music. I think most people, or a lot of, you know, it's surprising the amount of people that hear songs on the radio and never know who or what is singing it. You know, they just kind of accept music as some kind of, it's like air, they breathe it, but it's not even something they really love. And then, of course, on the other end of the scale, you have people that are really passionate about music, which would include myself, and I would assume most people that would download this podcast would also be incredibly passionate about music. So, it's hard. I never try to win people over or try to really upsell it, you know. I'd feel like I was being an Amway kind of dude or something. Probably one of my favorite lines is, if I ever give someone a CD and they don't really listen to that music, I always say, well, the great thing about this CD is that if you have people that are staying too long at your house at a dinner party, put this on and be enthusiastic, and they'll leave within 5 minutes.
All right. Okay. So before we get into some more questions with Paul, let's dive into the playlist here. So Paul, what was the track that we opened off today's show with?
Okay, this is one of my favorite artists at the moment. He runs a very tiny cassette label called Housecraft. I think most of the time he's based in Florida, although he seems to be a little nomadic. His name is Jeffrey Aston, and he records under multiple of names, but on this occasion, it's the main name that I know, called Zi-Fi Day or Ziffer Day. It's from an early cassette on that label called Used Parts Galaxy, and that was the A-side, and I just think that's such a beautiful piece of music. The thing I love about Zi-Fi Day is that you get to hear a lot of music, and after a while you can become a little jaded, or you can sort of go, yeah, I know what that guy's doing, or you kind of have a bit of an idea. Well, while I might have some skerrican of an idea, there are a lot of sounds in there I have absolutely no clue what's going on, and it's quite mysterious at times. I'm sure he's using loop pedals, but I feel like sometimes when I see loop pedals, I want to smash them because I think they've been really overused or used poorly. But I feel with Zi-Fi Day, he's doing something that is really special, and it never fails to sort of take me off into this other place, and I kind of forget where I am. I think if music can do that, that's pretty amazing. So that's probably one of my favourite tracks off his. There's only two tracks. It's only a little cassette, and that track was called Paper Giant Blind with Age.
All right, sounds good. So what's going to be the first track that's going to start off our next block here?
Okay, so there's a connector between this last track by Zi-Fi Day and this next track by Hospilin, in that they're both released on the same label, which is Housecraft. This is a fellow called Kane Poor, who uses the name Hospilin. Kane and the previous guy, Jeff, also make music under the name Tricorn and Q, and it has that same airiness, sort of quite a mysterious kind of sound in their duo. Hospilin, on the other hand, is just straightforward, more very lo-fi guitar musings. But for me, there's something, it's like they, with their music, they sprinkle it with fairy dust or something. I can't quite put my finger on what it is, but it just really sounds beautiful. And this particular track has a little bit of a wonky edge, which I always like. It's almost like, as the person was recording it direct to cassette, they were shaking the machine at the same time. This is from a really obscure little tape. I think only 75 copies have made. I'm sure, 300 times more that people have downloaded it from some blog somewhere. But it's, yeah, just a really great little release that should be reissued. This track's called Flown/Flown.
All right, welcome back. Armand here with our guest Paul Goff of Pimmin, who curated today's podcast. So, Paul, what did we play in that last block right there?
It's a duo that was released on a Japanese label, which is a little hard to determine if it was actually on a label called 333 or a label called Futari. I never quite figured it out. This was an example of, I should say who it was first, it was World Standard, who does more electronic stuff, and Moose Hill, who is a guitarist. The release was called Graceful Silence, and I played a track called Snowy Land. I just read that from like a release sheet, and it could have been some record store that just said what's coming out this week. And I remember reading it and just knowing for some reason that I would really like this, but I also knew that I was probably highly unlikely to find it in my local record store. And my employer, for some reason that week, from our record library said, hey, is there any music we should be buying at the moment? And I said, yeah, we really need this record. And I think it was pretty expensive because it was a Japanese import. And immediately it ticked all the boxes I wanted. It was sort of melancholic, primarily acoustic guitar, a little bit of, I think, something like piano accordion, and then just very small nuances of electronics here and there with a little bit of field recordings. I just think it's a really absolutely beautiful release. I managed to find it about a year later when I was going through Germany, and I got home and realized I paid about like $70 for it, but I didn't care because it really was that special. So that was from World Standard and Moose Hill, and then the track we started from Pospelin, which also these days seems to go for a mozza on, mozza being a lot of money, on eBay. I think somebody paid over $100 for it because it was only 75 copies made. Whether you'd pay $75 for a tape, that is the question. But the tape in question is called Some People Sleepwalker from Pospelin, and I played the track Flown.
All right. Okay. So before we jump into the next block, you've recently released an album. I think it came out, in September, something like that. It recently, the Silent Ballet put out their top 100 albums of the year, and it went at, I think, number 21. Was that right?
Yeah, which was very nice.
All right, so I just wanted you to mention it, basically. Tell us a little bit about it. What's it called? How did you come about making this album?
The release is called The Ansem Orbit, and it's for Lawrence English's label Room 40. I've been friends with Lawrence for many years now. In fact, I think the year he started, he came to one of my very early concerts and sort of came up and spoke to me at that stage. And we've always spoken about doing a release. Inevitably, I think I've been on quite a few compilations, but I, for whatever reason, there was a period, I think, in the middle of the building years of Room 40 when I kind of had stopped doing a lot of new music. But always in the back of my head, I was thinking about something that would, I guess, fit the bill of what Room 40 stands for. And so in some ways, it's probably a little, it's a slightly gentler release, if I would say that, because there's still some tracks that are quite big on there. And I like the juxtaposition between noise and unusual sounds sort of intertwined with, you know, slow, melancholic passages that are quite musical. So I guess what happens with me with making music is that I really have a lot of sort of what I call skeletal tracks that I've never finished, and I kind of do those all the time. So there are things that are sitting around, and then one day it's a bit like the Eureka moment. Something will hit and I'll suddenly start. It'll be generally one track, and from that spawns, I start just making notes and I start writing ideas of what track this will be from these different things that I've curated. So in some cases there are quite old tracks on there that have just never been quite finished. But I sort of weave together something that is cohesively unified, but I do like diversity. So I like, you know, something that's quite slow, then there's something that's a little more sort of jarring or has a different stance. But there's certainly this release to me, if I was to sum it up in one word, imagine yourself tumbling slow motion through outer space. Not that I'm in any way sort of, you know, travelling the cosmic planes or anything like that, but that was just the thoughts that I had when I, and that sort of came from the writings of this author who I really loved, who just bizarrely this year passed away not long after the CD was released, and the title actually even comes from his writing. So his name is Russell Hoban, and he actually had a different book that had the concept of a guy in a spaceship and the spaceship doing like a jump through space and then re-emerging somewhere else. The only thing was the spaceship totally disappeared and he was just traveling like on his own without a spacesuit and somehow survived. It was very strange. But I guess when I read that, it really made me imagine what it would be like, you know, to just have that unimpeded view of the cosmos and I guess that kind of grand gesturing at times with my music and hear this very, very, you know, the little becomes big. From little loops comes these very large, spacious places, and it's quite interesting how that kind of happens. And so I find at times, even when I'm making my own music, I get lost in it, and I kind of think, well, you know, it's a bit like if you were driving and somehow found yourself, you know, 5 hours from home, and you go, what the hell, how did I get here, you know? And I think that's what happens when I'm making my music. So that was the premise for what I wanted to achieve with The Answer More. But, you know, I guess I try not to listen back to it too much because then I could nitpick it. But overall, I was pretty happy with it. So,
all right, sounds good. So I was going to ask you where the title comes from, but since you already answered that, I'll ask you, where does the name Pimmin come from?
Oh, that's just me being stupid, really. it was a silly word that has long lost meaning from when I was a child. I always used to make up names and silly things. And I guess when it came to the point of deciding on a name for doing my music, it was a little too, I thought, brazen for me just to use my own name, or perhaps I just wanted to hide behind some anonymous title. So Pimmin came to mind, and it also, to me, it didn't really mean anything. If someone said to you the word Pimmin, you'd just sort of look at them and go, okay, I don't know what that means. I think I mentioned this the other day to somebody. Bizarrely, about a year later, I noticed there was some game from Germany, which I forget what it's called, but they actually have a character in it called a Pimmin, who is blue, fat, and bald, which on reflection, perhaps I chose the wrong name. But yeah, it really was just meant as the old, you know, blank canvas to let people, you know, if I'd called myself, you know, Hot Flames or something like that, you know, you would have a different connotation of what you were going to expect. Of course, you would not be getting Hot Flames, you'd be getting something totally different. But I think Pimmin's a good word. I could have chosen a word that had a lot more consonants in it and been really hard to pronounce, but, you know, I wanted something that was relatively easy but had no meaning.
All right. Okay, so we'll just jump back into the playlist right here. So what's going to be the first track to start off this next block?
Okay, this is a group that was pretty influential in the post-punk scene, I guess you would say, although you wouldn't really classify them as post-punk. They came from Melbourne, out of a musical community called the Clifton Hill Musical Community, which is a suburb of Melbourne, pretty close to the city, under the leadership of a guy called Philip Brophy, who has gone on to have a career as being a great film critic and writer. The group had an semi-unpronounceable name. They were called, which is like clicking your lips three times, and it was written as an arrow going across, then an arrow going up, then another arrow going across. Their music was pretty hard to define. This is from a very obscure, I don't think this has ever been reissued. I bought this at the time. It was for like an art gallery exhibition. And for me, what I love about this particular track called Video Space, the album's called Spaces, it's one of those pieces of music that is what I call the mantra. It's very loop-based, which I love. So it's in that way, it's very repetitive. And it's like you've intersected this music through a place in space and time, and you know that it's extending either side of you forever. It's just this, it's a bit like noise for Emma, although it doesn't sound like that. It's that music that just never stops, and that's what this is to me. And when it locks into its kind of wonky rhythmic groove with saxophones, and it's just got this really beautiful endlessness to it that I really love. Unfortunately, it does finish, but it fades, so you know that it really is going to keep going on. So this is...
All right, welcome back. Armand here with our guest, Paul, who curated today's podcast. So, Paul, what did we play in that last block right there?
In some ways, there's a little bit of a connection between the track I've started with and this particular track, which is a group called Anvil Salute. And I think I probably found their music online somewhere and then chased down, this is going back a few years ago, I think the guy was called Gabe Wingfield from memory, and just bought a whole bunch of his music. And Anvil Salute are almost like the, I guess, Americana sort of music made on the porch version of, you know, there's a similar kind of longevity going to the work, you know, it could just keep going and going. It's from a CDR called All the Animals of the Forest, and the track's called Shape to Endless Middle. And for me, that particular track, I just really love. There's something warm and inviting about it, as if, you know, they're saying, come on down and have a big barbecue with us. And going from the first track we played, which was an Australian group from the 80s called, which is spelt with three arrows, across, up and across. And they created a lot of music in the very early 80s, although it was very underground. And I guess perhaps, you know, as time's gone on, people have come to appreciate them more. And it's from a very obscure vinyl issue. And if you found it, you'd probably have to pay a couple hundred bucks, called Spaces.
All right. So before we jump into the next block right here, I just want to enter to the point of the show, I guess, we recently brought back called The Lightning Round, which is basically going to be me asking you a few quick, stupid questions. So we'll start off with the question, who do you prefer, Patrick Swayze or Kurt Russell?
Swayze.
All right.
Don't ask me why.
All right.
But maybe I just, you know, had a secret Footloose fantasy going on there.
Sure. Okay. So the second question, what do you least want people to be doing while listening to your music?
Talking.
All right. That's a good answer.
If I'm playing live, and it just depends, but if I'm in a really foul mood, I think, stuff this, and I just play really high frequencies, so they have to go outside.
All right. If you order a pizza, what are your toppings?
Well, I can tell you what my toppings wouldn't be. It'd be any of these kind of nouveau pizzas that, you know, have, you know, marinated, you know, wombat or chicken or something on it, or anything with pineapple is just out the door for me. So to me, a perfect, you know, thin, crispy margarita with some basil, or, I mean, I do like, you know, pepperoni and things. I guess more traditional toppings for me.
Sure. If you can play live in one place in the world, where would you play?
That's a good question. I don't know. I guess, well, my first thought just then was some kind of stadium, but that would be really dumb watching. I mean, as it is, if you went to a stadium and you saw like a four-piece band, like if you were to see U2 or something, you just see four blobs on the stage. So can you imagine a dude with a laptop? That would be really boring. I was just going to say some really nice theater. I mean, I would have said the Opera House, but I actually got the pleasure to play there, the Sydney Opera House. I got actually asked to play there about a year ago, which was kind of a major shock, and that was, although it wasn't in the main hall, so I guess that would be the answer, in the main hall of the Sydney Opera House, so I could really inflict it on about 400 or 500 people or however many people it holds.
All right. Okay, final question. Who do you prefer, Hall, Oates, Simon, or Garfunkel?
Garfunkel, because of his hair.
All right.
And just I probably listened to more of Simon and Garfunkel growing up than Hall and Oates. I just always remember really liking Garfunkel's voice. I mean, I like Simon too.
Sure.
So, but the hair won it for me.
All right. Okay. So we'll jump back into the playlist here. So what's going to be the first track to start off this next block?
Okay, I'm not quite sure how I found out about this group. I have a funny feeling, although I didn't do my research before this, that I could have scrolled through, like I'm sure a lot of people do, when they look at the end of year silent ballet countdown and they go, who the hell is this at number 45 or whoever it is? And you will inevitably, no matter how passionate you are about music, you'll come across entries and you go, oh, I've never heard of this. And you'll try and scout it down. And this was one of these, I think. The group are from Windsor in Ontario, from Canada. They're called Bloemfontein. It took me, and this is where, I mean, I do get music from blogs, but if I really love something, I won't stop until I find it. And I finally found a copy of this just about 3 or 4 months ago, which is probably why it's come back into my realization of wanting to share it. It's a double CD. It's, I guess, what you would loosely term post-rock. It's quite slow, languid, instrumental music. The thing I love about it is most of the tracks, like, there's nothing under 15 minutes. It's almost like these guys are the necks of slow, languid music in that their durations are so long. I think this original track, which I've obviously faded, was about 25 minutes. But it, to me, is just really relaxing, fantastic stuff. It doesn't, you know, reinvent the wheel or necessarily change the world, although I'm sure if a lot more people listen to this, maybe there'd be less fighting. So the group's called Bloemfontein. It's called The Longer Now. If you can find this, do it, because it's really good. And I'm playing the track Sounds Like Going Home. Thank you.
All right, welcome back. Armand here with our guest Paul Goff of Pimmin, who curated today's podcast. So, Paul, what did we play in that last block right there?
Okay, now this really is one of the early bands of my sort of mind being altered. From a fantastic little label in Sydney, which in the last couple of years has been recognised with a lot of reissued vinyl and CD, which is I've been very happy about. The label was called M Squared. It operated out of an inner city suburb, and it was quite an eclectic bunch of characters that in some cases swapped band members to create different bands. This particular band, I think, sort of came to the label sort of from the outskirts of, you know, just through friends and that. They were called The Dead Travel Fast. In fact, they were called the makers of The Dead Travel Fast, and the reason for that is on one of the very first releases on that label, they made up a song called The Dead Travel Fast. And they didn't have a name. In fact, on the record, they're not credited as any band. And somebody said, who are you? And they just said, we're the makers of The Dead Travel Fast. And that's how their name came about. And this is from an album that is to be reissued next year, I believe, called The Vessels. It's a kind of music that I think is timeless. I think it would sound just as fresh if it was released now as it was back in 79-80. It has this kind of... The only two bands I've ever been able to think that have a kind of a connectivity to them are the Penguin Cafe Orchestra and perhaps another band that I think are amazing called Woo. So they only released a couple of albums, but in the last year or so, one of the members of this band and a couple of guys from that same label have re-emerged because there's been so much re-interest, and they've revived one of the other bands on that label called Scattered Order, who were a great sort of post-punk band. But, The Dead Travel Fast just have this really carnivalesque, sort of, you know, very otherworldly kind of sound to them that I think is fantastic. That's from, as I said, the album called The Vessels, and I played a track called Into the Ark. That's also one to look out for when it gets reissued. And we heard from Bloemfontein, I think equally obscure because there's very little to be found about them now, and I don't think they exist anymore, which is a shame. But they left behind this sort of double CD of very slow-mo, you know, instrumental kind of guitar rock that's kind of melancholic as well, but well worth listening to. And I played a Pimmin edit of Sounds Like Going Home.
All right. So we've got one track left in today's show. Before we jump into that, so Paul, 2011 basically just ended. What were your favorite releases of the year?
I have to say that it doesn't matter how long time goes on, and as you get older, there's this kind of expectation that you'll become more stuck in the past. And I've even had a friend one year say to me, oh, there was no good music this year. And they may as well have just said something in a totally foreign language because I just looked at them like they're an idiot. But I just find I'm more and more excited about new releases. For me, my end-of-year list that I do on my radio program, which I nominate 50, I had to halve, and I felt like I was sort of getting rid of my firstborn as each one was sort of popping off the list. But I guess, you know, things that really stood out for me this year, there were two great releases by a guy called John McCaffrey, who goes under the name Part Timer, on an equally amazing label called Hibernate out of the UK. He did a little postcard that I was very fortunate to actually see him perform that piece live, and he, like, never performs live. It was called Undead. He also released an LP that's sort of come out at the very end of the year under the name Scissors and Sellotape, called For the Tired and Ill at Ease, that I think is brilliant. I noticed that number two in your list of Silent Ballet was one of my favourites this year, from A Winged Victory for the Sullen. I thought equally that was an amazing release. Penis from Berlin, Nils Fram, I think is amazing. I think his Felt issue was incredible. There's a couple of releases on Hatna from Tape, Revelations, that release was great, as was the Ohio release, The State We're In. Yeah, just so many things. There's a couple of, I think there's a whole bunch of people in LA that blow my mind. Matthew Sullivan, under the name Earn, and his duo with, so the Michael Jackson tribute, 1958 to 2009, is incredible. Sean McCann, I think, is an absolute genius and somebody I hope that people pick up on more and more. So they're just some of the things. But, you know, I could have named, as I said, you know, quite Simon Scott's release, Bunny, I thought was incredible. So, yeah, all beautiful, fantastic releases that should be in your collection.
All right, sounds great. So what's next for Pimmin, or for Paul Gough, for that matter?
Well, I guess it's a continuation on what I'm doing. As far as releases go, I mean, once again, as I said, when I kind of get in the zone and working on a release, then I can sort of say, well, I'm definitely doing this. But I'm at the moment just collecting. I've got lots of tracks, and I just need to sit down. I guess what's taking up my mind at the moment is I've been asked to go and perform in Paris at an institute called GRM. And so based on that, I decided to take some time off work and go and perform. So I've got 5 shows in the UK and then playing through Germany and hopefully Italy and up into Norway. So I guess I'm really, you know, more trying to organise all of that and think about, you know, what I'll be doing when I go there. So that's really at the moment, and I tend to not be so far focused. So I would hope by the end of the year I'll have another release, but at this stage it's still on the drawing board.
All right. So where can people go ahead and buy your records, listen to them, see your tour dates, that kind of stuff?
Well, I guess I update on Twitter. So if you just follow at Pimmin, I'm not a great entrepreneur, but I'm trying to be better. The other way is probably through, you know, I have a like page on Facebook where I would update any of that kind of information. I don't really sell things directly myself, but, you know, occasionally I've had people write and say, look, there were 2 or 3 things in your catalogue I've never been able to find, and I'm quite happy to make up special editions like that. So in general, if you follow through Facebook or Twitter, you should be able to sort of keep up with what's happening.
All right. So what's going to be the final track in today's show?
Well, in some ways I saved one of my favorites for last, because this was through sheer self-discovery that I found this release, and it really has ended up being one of my favorites. I, about 4 years ago, much to the horror of my family, I decided to go through the obscure progressive rock canon, and was treated much like an outcast during that time. And there was an online thing called Gibraltar, which was like an encyclopedia of prog. And so I was kind of just trawling through that. And you could do just word searches. And for some reason, I decided to just throw in the word drone and see what came up and see if I could find something out of the box that I hadn't heard of. And this one came up, and it was called, the artist was the Richter Band. And they're from, I guess, the old Czechoslovakia. It was a self-released or released on a small label from there somewhere. And I immediately Googled it, and I found it for sale in some store in the States. And it wasn't that expensive. There was only one copy, and I bought it. And most of the instrumentation, from what I can tell, is home-built. There's not a lot of information on there that I certainly can read, because it's not in English. But the first 3 tracks sort of segue into one long 20-minute piece, and it's just shimmering, it's beautiful. I can't imagine that anyone that didn't like ambient or, you know, post-rock kind of music wouldn't think this was some long-lost cousin of the canon, you know. I think it came out in the early 90s, so it kind of predates a lot of music of this ilk. And those 3 tracks in succession are probably, you know, it's one of those things, like I said, it came as a, you know, just because I read what somebody had written, I thought, I think I'm going to like this, and I didn't realize how much I was actually going to love it. So I've only included the middle section of that sort of three-parter, and it's called Sestu in the original language, or On the Way, and this is the Richter Band.
All right, so thanks, Paul, for doing today's show.
Thank you, Armand, for letting me share what I love with the Silent Ballet audience.
All right, let's jump into this track. Again, here is the Richter Band with Sestu / On the Way.